تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره، همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه السلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being. A brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
قال علي عليه السلام العفاف زينة الفقر والشكر زينة الغنى.
Imam Ali said, "The beauty of destitution is chastity, and the beauty of riches is gratefulness." Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's To My Brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, the son of Abu Talib, alayhi salam. Dear friends, the Muslims unanimously believe that the pillars of Islam were strengthened by Imam Ali. And so we find, dear brothers and sisters, dear friends, that Imam Ali alayhi salam, peace and blessings upon him, defended the Holy Prophet, which in reality means that he defended the word of Allah, and he defended the message of Islam with his body, with his soul, with his heart, and of course with his sword. Now, this defense of Islam at the hands of Imam Ali's sword, of course, is something which cannot be overlooked by history. And thus, history has established as a fact that the sword of Imam Ali is what defended Islam and defended the Messenger of Allah in the most sensitive of times. And so in this relation, there is no one who preceded or was better than Imam Ali alayhi salam, and there was no one who could reach this position of Imam Ali as the defender of Islam even after Imam Ali alayhi salam. Imam Ali was courageous and valorous in the battlefields. He was Allah's sword, and he was the remover of sorrow from the face of the Holy Prophet, to such an extent that Imam Ali amazed the angels when he attacked the kuffar without any fear and with total courage and bravery. So, dear friends, we are the followers of Imam Ali. And if some of us aren't the followers of Imam Ali, nonetheless, we respect him as the fourth caliph of the Muslims. We respect him as the sword of Islam. We respect him because he is the champion of Islam, who protected and defended Islam in its most sensitive of times. Of course, as a Shia Muslim, we respect and love Imam Ali, for he is the successor of the Holy Prophet. He is the first divinely appointed Imam. And so, in any manner that you regard Imam Ali, and you respect Imam Ali, and you love Imam Ali, this is what we learn: to be brave, to be courageous, to defend Islam as much as we possibly can. This, dear friends, a beautiful lesson, the defense of Islam, the protection of Islam, brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother. My name is Muhammad. After returning from the Battle of Siffin, Imam Ali gave certain pieces of advice to one of his sons. Historians consider him to be Imam Hassan alayhi salam, while others are of the opinion that he was Muhammadul Hanafi. He wrote this letter in the form of a will. They deal with almost every aspect of life, which goes a long way to make a man successful in life, brave, humane, generous, virtuous, and pious. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the last will of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. My dear son, develop the habit of patience against sufferings, calamities, and adversities. This virtue of patience is one of the highest values of morality and nobility of character, and it is the best habit which one can develop. Trust in Allah and let your mind seek His protection in every calamity and suffering, because you will thus entrust yourself and your affairs to the best trustee and to the mightiest guardian. Do not seek help or protection from anybody but Allah. Reserve your prayers, your requests, your solicitations, your supplications, and your entreaties to Him and Him alone, because to grant, to give, to confer and to bestow, as well as to withhold, to deprive, to refuse, and to debar, lies only in His power. ask as much of his blessings and seek as much of his guidance as you can. Try to understand my exhortation. Ponder over them deeply. Do not take them lightly, and do not turn away from them, because the best knowledge is that which benefits the listener. The knowledge which does not benefit anybody is useless, not valuable, and not worth learning and remembering. My dear son, when I realized that I was getting old, and when I felt that weakness and feebleness are gradually creeping into me, then I hastened to advise you as to the best ways of leading a noble, virtuous, and useful life. I hated the idea that death should overtake me before I tell you all that I wanted to tell, or before my mental capacities, like my bodily strength, are weak.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. And I'd like to begin with this very question about Amir al-Mu'mineen. And the question about who is Ali is actually a very simple question. What I want to answer tonight is the question of what is Ali. There is a difference between who is Ali and what is Ali. So you can have the physical Quran, but if you really want the true interpretation of the Quran, you need an imam who is the waris of the Quran. And therefore, there is no one among the companions of the Prophet has ever claimed what Ali claimed about the Quran. There is no one who has claimed about the Quran among the companions of the Prophet the way Ali has claimed. And what does he say? He says, ask me before you lose me. You know, many places he says, Saluni, Saluni, Qablan, Tafqiduni. Ask me before you lose me. And then he says, why? He says, for by the one who split the grain and created the soul of the human being, if you ask me which verse of the Quran was revealed at the night time or the daytime, whether it was revealed in Makkah or in Medina, or it was revealed when the Prophet was traveling or he was stationed in Medina, or whether the ayat was abrogated or the one which abrogated the other ayat, whether the ayat is muhkam and clear or an ayat which is mutashabih and of a symbolic nature, and whether you need its interpretation or the context in which the revelation came, I shall indeed inform you about it. But remember, having said all this, just to say that Ali is a good teacher and scholar of Quran is not sufficient. There are many, many scholars of Quran in the world, the good ones, the bad ones. And so don't say Ali is a good scholar of the Quran. He is something greater than that. And that is what I would try to explain to when I say what is Ali, especially in the context of the Quran itself.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Russia, Zaglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Palestinians in the blockaded Gaza Strip demonstrated in front of the Red Cross office in Gaza to drum up support for thousands of Palestinian prisoners languishing inside Israeli prisons and the escapees from the Gilboa Maximum Security Prison. They called for the immediate release of all Palestinian prisoners, especially women and children. During a press conference in front of the Red Cross office, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas conditioned any future prisoner exchange with the regime on the release of the Gilboa escapees.
Our prisoners, including the six escapees, will be freed soon, despite all Zionist leaders' attempts to keep them behind bars. God willing, the six inmates will be on the top of the list of any prisoner swap deal. Those serving multiple life sentences and all female prisoners, as well as sick prisoners, will be freed in any future prisoner swap deal.
The Israeli prison service keeps Palestinian inmates under deplorable conditions, lacking proper hygienic standards. Palestinian prisoners have also been subjected to systematic torture, harassment, and repression. Prisoners' advocacy groups accused the Israeli regime of increasing the ill treatment of Palestinian prisoners following last week's historic escape of the six prisoners.
Following the heroic escape from the Gilboa prison, the Israeli prison service began fierce oppressive campaigns against all Palestinian prisoners inside Israeli jails. It has transferred scores of prisoners to other jails and isolated dozens of them. The campaigns by the Israeli prison service include strip searching and torturing the prisoners. Some prisoners have sustained serious injuries.
A former prisoner who was released during the 2011 prisoner swap deal with the Israeli regime told Press TV, Israel violates all the rights and freedoms granted to prisoners by the 4th Geneva Convention.
Sick prisoners with chronic diseases are in critical condition due to medical negligence by the Israeli regime. Some 230 prisoners have lost their lives inside Israeli jails since 1967 because of medical negligence. Israel is an illegitimate and inhumane regime, and its prison service continues to violate all international laws and norms, mainly in the 4th Geneva Convention regarding the treatment of prisoners.
Experts say that the protection Israel enjoys from Western countries, mainly the United States, gives it the green light to further violate the rights of Palestinians. People here consider Palestinian prisoners inside Israeli jails as political prisoners and freedom fighters. Securing the release is a highly emotive issue for all Palestinians. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
The International Atomic Energy Agency's Board of Governors opens a weekly session just the day after IAEA Director General Rafael Mariano Grossi's trip to Tehran. Grossi had raised concerns about IAEA access to monitoring equipment in Iran and safeguards-related questions about the country's past nuclear activities. Rafael Grossi said no one could expect him to resolve the outstanding safeguards-related issues with Iran within a 10-hour visit to the country. The most urgent matter, however, the imminent loss of IAEA data, had been adequately addressed. The IAEA's surveillance cameras will now continue to record data that will be kept in Iran under joint seals. But for how long? Apparently, as long as it takes for talks to revive the nuclear deal known as the JCPOA to bear fruit.
You may have seen that this issue of the length has not been addressed. And the fact is that we, having discussed this, we agreed that it is better and more practical to go about it as developments evolve. It is a breach to give us some monitoring and verification capacity until there is something hopefully better.
Grossi said he would soon travel back to Iran to have a clear conversation with the new Iranian government, which in his words has very firm ideas with regards to nuclear activities. Iran's ambassador to the IAEA says all of the country's nuclear activities, including enrichment at the 20 and 60% levels and the production of uranium metal, are within Iran's rights under the NPT, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and in line with the country's safeguards commitments. Kazem Gharibabadi says since the U.S.'s unilateral sanctions against Iran are still in place, and the other sides have not lived up to their commitments under the nuclear deal to remove them, nobody can demand that Iran stop these activities. Homa Lezgi, Vienna.
Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah said on Monday that the first Iranian fuel shipment has reached the Banias port in Syria and will be transported by land to Lebanon this week.
The transport of fuel from Syria to the Bekaa begins Thursday, and it will be stored in specific tanks, and a second ship will arrive in Banias within a few days. The third ship, which I have mentioned before, has been prepared. All managerial prerequisites have been accomplished, so the vessel will be ready to sail. We're also preparing the logistics for the fourth shipment. About a month later, we'll see if we need a fifth or sixth ship. I have to clarify that we don't seek any gains on this fuel. We'll be for all Lebanese and everyone who lives in Lebanon.
In his Talvi speech, Sayyid Nasrallah noted that Hezbollah will offer a one-month fuel donation to state-run hospitals, nursing homes, orphanages, disability centers, state-run water institutions, municipalities that have water wells, the civil defense, and the Lebanese Red Cross. Experts believe the speech highlights a roadmap Hezbollah has put forth to alleviate the fuel crisis the Lebanese people are dealing with, in light of the government's inactivity, and at the same time, challenges pressures imposed by the West against the nation.
Hezbollah's decision to bring in fuel and even warn the enemies that it will be considered Lebanese assets and that any strike on the ships will lead to retaliation was a very influential issue. It dealt a blow to the U.S. sanctions, whether against Iran, Syria, or Lebanon. The fact that the ship has reached its destination safely and has unloaded its cargo is in itself a victory.
The Hezbollah chief stressed that the resistance's deterrence power kept the ship safe. He said once the shipment reaches its destination, the fuel will be distributed carefully to prevent any potential profit seekers from taking advantage. Lebanon has been sleeping in the dark for many nights. Sayyid Nasrallah has stressed that Hezbollah's initiative to bring in fuel to Lebanon from Iran will not only bring electricity, it will also break the current U.S. sanctions against the country. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Iran's fully indigenous Sahan frigate and Macron floating base are back in the Persian Gulf after more than 4 months of sailing that took them as far as the northern end of the Atlantic Ocean, over a distance of 44,000 kilometers. The naval crew were warmly welcomed by senior military officials, who feel proud that Iran's navy is now capable of sailing in the high sea for extended periods.
We passed through three oceans, the Indian Ocean, the South Atlantic, and North Atlantic Ocean. On the way, we passed through rough seas and finally arrived in Russia's St. Petersburg port. We then sailed all the way back home. All the mission took us some 4.5 months. This is the farthest point we have ever sailed to.
Sahan Frigate is a radar-evading vessel that's equipped with torpedo launchers and electronic warfare technologies. And Macron Floating Base is a support vessel that's fitted with a large helicopter pad. Sahan and Macron departed from the Persian Gulf in early May. The two ships passed by Cape of Good Hope, rounded Africa, and sailed through the North Atlantic Ocean to reach Russia, all without docking for refueling on the way.
Throughout our journey, we did not stop to refuel or recharge our medical or food supplies. We went straight to our destination. We had our support vessel Macron along with Sahan that refueled it along the way. It sends a strong message to our enemies, especially the U.S., which tried to play down our naval might.
Iran's defense sector has been under 4 decades of U.S.-led arms embargoes. Iranian officials say they have viewed the sanctions as an opportunity to gain self-sufficiency in the industry. Iran now claims that it has indigenized more than 80% of its arsenal, from drones and helicopters to warships and submarines.
The Iranian Navy is back from the longest voyage in its history. To Iran, sailing through the Atlantic Ocean was a game-changer for two reasons. First, it shows that the country can rely on its domestically built equipment for tough naval missions amid U.S. arms embargoes. And most importantly, it adds Iran to the short list of countries with a blue water navy. Yusuf Jalali from the Persian Gulf.
Abu Ubaida,
spokesman for the Izzeddin al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of Hamas, pledged in a speech to release the prisoners who were rearrested after escaping from an Israeli jail on Monday. He also stressed that the rearrest of the prisoners does not hide the extent of shame Israel is going through, as Palestinian inmates have shaken their security system reputation.
No prisoner swap deal will be made without the release of our heroic prisoners who were rearrested by the occupation forces. We promise our inmates that they will be liberated soon within the no swap deal. Our inmates have exposed the fragility of the security of the enemy.
Immediately after Barbados' speech, Palestinian resistance fired rockets toward the occupied lands to show that they are ready to face the Israeli regime and defend Palestinians. In response, the Israeli airplane launched an airstrike on the Gaza Strip.
The Palestinian resistance has achieved many goals. First, it succeeded in forcing the Israeli regime out of Gaza. Second, it demolished the Zionist thought of having this land for themselves. Israeli violations and attacks against Palestinians will never terrify us.
In conjunction with this, the resistance factions held a national conference stressing the importance of their resistance.
The clashes with this Israeli regime will persist. The regime can never feel secure as long as it steals our rights and kills our people. We will never leave our prisoners alone, and the resistance will set them free.
On Saturday evening, the rearrested prisoners appeared at the Israeli court in the city of Nazareth to extend their detention while being deprived of having a lawyer. Palestinians here stress on supporting the Palestinian detainees in Israeli jails and considering them the symbol of the Palestinian issue. Palestinian factions believe that the resistance is the only way to get their rights back. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Yemen's armed forces, backed by local tribes, have successfully conducted the third phase of Operation Nasr al-Mubin. The spokesman of the Yemeni army, Yahya Sariyah, said Mahliya and the Rahaba directorates of Marib, with an area of 1,200 square kilometers, were fully liberated. The spokesman also said over 150 mercenaries loyal to the Saudi-led coalition were killed or injured during the operation.
The Yemeni unit succeeded in fully liberating the districts of Mahliya and Al Rafa during the third phase of Al Nasr al Mubin operation. During the operation, 151 mercenaries loyal to the Saudi-led coalition were killed or injured, and a total area of about 1,200 square kilometers were liberated.
Saria also hailed the tribes of Marib for their role in supporting the Yemeni army in achieving the recent victory. Observers said the Yemeni army is now implementing the fourth phase of the Nasr al-Mubin operation, aimed at fully liberating all the occupied territories of Yemen.
The third phase of the Nasr al-Mubin operation was a strong and important stage for the Yemeni army, which managed to liberate 1,200 Yemeni lands from the mercenaries loyal to the Saudi-led coalition. Military operations are still ongoing, and there is a fourth phase through which the Yemeni army seeks to liberate all of the northern Yemeni lands from all forms of foreign presence.
For months now, the Yemeni army has been intensifying its military operations to liberate the Al-Dutch province of Marib from the Saudi-backed forces and terrorist groups. This move was considered as the first step forward to expel foreign forces from the rest of the country.
Yemeni tribes have repeatedly announced their opposition to the presence of any foreign forces, especially those of Saudi Arabia. People here believe that the military will not be able to liberate the country without the backing of tribesmen. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
A big conference was held in the Gaza Strip on Sunday titled The Resistance Liberates and Oslo Destroys. Attendees demanded the cancellation of the so-called Oslo Peace Accord that was signed in 1993. In September of that year, the Palestine Liberation Organization, PLO, signed the Oslo Accord with the Israeli regime on the lawn of the White House in Washington, D.C.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas asserted the failure of the Oslo Accord and affirmed its adherence to armed resistance against the Israeli regime.
We assert that the shortest way to liberate all of Palestine and the prisoners is through the rifle and the resistance. Armed resistance is the one and only way to achieve the goals and aspirations of the Palestinian people.
The agreement was meant to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, but years after signing the Oslo Accord, Palestinians consider it as a terrible chapter in their history.
The world must understand that the Israeli regime doesn't respect any international accords or agreements and only understands the language of force. The Oslo Accord has only brought pain and suffering and disasters to the Palestinians.
The conference comes almost 4 months after the Israeli military bombarded the besieged Gaza Strip for 11 consecutive days, killing at least 260 Palestinians, including 66 children. The Gaza-based resistance groups, mainly Hamas and the Islamic Jihad, also fired some 4,000 rockets towards the Israeli-occupied territories during the 11-day war.
The Oslo Accord caused the Palestinian rift, while the armed resistance has managed to achieve several victories against the Zionist enemy. The Palestinians are fully backing the resistance, especially after realizing that the Zionist enemy was the only one who benefited from the Oslo Accord.
In its final communique, the conference announced that the Oslo Accord has been a major setback for Palestinians and is even worse than the Balfour Declaration of 1917, which helped create the Israeli regime on occupied Palestinian land. Palestinian resistance factions say that the futile Oslo Accords will not free Palestine and Al-Quds. They maintain that armed resistance is the key to freedom. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
On Saturday, in the Italian capital, hundreds of people staged a protest against the mandatory anti-COVID Green Pass, which came into effect on August 6 and whose effects are set to be further extended. The Italian government is planning to make the so-called vaccine passport a requirement for employees at all public sector workplaces, as well as potentially at key businesses in the private sector, including supermarkets. At the rally, protesters were holding banners which read "United for Freedom of Choice" and "Hands off our children."
Non discriminare, lasciare.
We are against all discriminations. People should be free to choose what's best for them, as stated in our constitution. Let me make clear that we are not against the vaccine.
Imposing a vaccine passport is nonsense. It's tantamount to blackmailing people. Furthermore, vaccines are still experimental and there are many unknowns about their effects.
The vaccine passport has been required since early August in order to access cultural and leisure venues across Italy. From September the 1st, the health certification has become obligatory for long-distance trains, domestic air flights and schools amid widespread grumblings.
Free vax protests held across Italy over the past weeks have often turned nasty. A few days ago, the police staged raids in several Italian cities against anti-vax extremists, during which weapons such as knives and clubs were found.
Le azioni sicuramente ledono.
These episodes have certainly affected our campaign. Let me add, however, that the media have purposely emphasized isolated incidents with the sole aim to criminalize all forms of dissent. So far, after weeks of protests, 8 people only have been put in custody by the police.
Anti-COVID Green Pass protesters at Saturday's rally in Rome were joined by supporters of far-right party Forza Nuova. An anti-vaccine passport protest was also held in Milan, with about 5,000 people parading in the city centre. Max Civili, Rome.
Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, has made a day-long visit to Tehran. During his short visit, he met with the new head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami. The Iranian official hailed the constructive talks he held with the head of the IAEA, Rafael Grossi, in the Iranian capital, Tehran, Speaking at a joint press conference after the meeting, Islamic described the negotiations mainly on technical issues as constructive and said confidence building is what matters for Tehran and the UN nuclear watchdog.
Today, Mr. Grossi came to Tehran at the invitation of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, and we had good and constructive talks. The negotiations were held in a spirit of cooperation to create opportunities for enhanced interactions within the framework of the International Atomic Energy Agency's rules and regulations. Mr. Grossi will visit Tehran again in the near future, and the IAEA's technical team will also come to Iran to make necessary arrangements for the replacement of surveillance camera memory cards in accordance with the safeguards agreement.
But I'm glad to say that today we were able to have a very concrete result, which has to do with the continuity of the operation of the agency's equipment here, which is indispensable for us to provide the necessary guarantees and the information to the IAEA and to the world that everything is in order and that we are going to be able to assist also to assist Iran in its future negotiations in the context of the JCPOA.
Back in February, Iran and the IAEA reached a technical understanding under which Tehran agreed to keep the camera recordings from its nuclear sites for 3 months as a goodwill gesture in support of diplomacy, waiting to see whether the other parties to the JCPOA could manage to bring the U.S. back into full compliance with the deal. The agreements came shortly after Iran decided to stop its voluntary implementation of the additional protocol that allowed the IAEA to carry out short-notice inspections in Iran, denying the agency's inspectors access to the country's nuclear facilities beyond the safeguards agreement. The decision was made in accordance with the December 2020 law passed by the Iranian parliament, dubbed a strategic action plan to counter sanctions that prompted the Iranian administration to restrict the IAEA's inspections and accelerate the development of the country's nuclear program beyond the limits set by the JCPOA. Iranian officials have cautioned the IAEA Board of Governors to avoid miscalculations at its upcoming meeting, warning that taking advantage of the IAEA for political purposes will draw a different response from Tehran. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. The trade barriers that made the import of Marks and Spencer's Percy Pig Sweets one of the first casualties of Brexit has added an extra £600 million in costs to British importers since January, it has emerged. Customs duties paid by UK businesses shot up from £1.6 billion in the first half of last year to a record £2.2 billion in the same period this year, according to an analysis of HMRC data. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Lisa O'Carroll. The piece is titled, Brexit Trade Barriers Added £600 million in Costs to UK Importers This Year. Trade barriers that made the import of Marks & Spencer's Percy Pig Sweets one of the first casualties of Brexit has added an extra £600 million in costs to British importers since January of this year, it has emerged. Customs duties paid by UK businesses shot up from £1.6 billion in the first half of last year to a record £2.2 billion in the same period this year, according to an analysis of HMRC data. Percy Pig Sweets were among 2,000 food product lines that were hit by rules of origin regulations that came into force with the Brexit trade deal on 1st of January. In January, Marks & Spencer's raised the prospect of Percy Pigs being subject to tariffs in Northern Ireland because of the rules of origin. Although manufactured in Germany, they were first brought to the UK before being re-exported to Ireland, a journey that would now be subject to import taxes because the tariff exemption in the trade fell away as soon as they were re-exported. The scale of the impact of these complicated rules on importers is only emerging now and gives the lie to the notion that a free trade deal is cost-free to businesses. Since then, thousands of businesses have found they have to pay taxes if the product they are importing under the trade and cooperation deal is not sufficiently manufactured in the European Union. Trade bodies are reporting that some companies find the rules so complicated that they end up just paying the customs duties for ease of trading. Michelle Dale, a senior manager at accountancy firm UHY Hacker Young, said, British businesses weren't given enough time to help to prepare for the cost of Brexit or the masses of paperwork involved. The result is that the cost of tariffs and extra paperwork is now causing serious difficulties for many British businesses who are already struggling to stay profitable in the face of mounting pandemic-induced costs. The rise in customs duties paid is directly attributed to Brexit, as they were not payable on goods imported from the European Union while Britain was in the single market. Under a trade deal, goods that are majority made or processed in the European Union can be imported without customs duties, with slight variations depending on the product. The Percy Pig issue is still an issue more than 8 months on for importers. Across the board, companies are still having difficulties getting to grips with rules of origin, said William Bain, the head of trade policy at the British Chamber of Commerce. If the exporter cannot provide a certificate of origin, then importers may not be able to provide sufficient proof over the origin of the product, and some are then saying it's just easier to pay the tariff, he added. Fergus McReynolds, the director of the European Union and International Affairs at Make UK, which represents the manufacturers, said businesses are still grappling with rules of origin and what import duties are payable on. Fergus McReynolds added, "We didn't actually see the black and white of the text until Christmas Eve, and that didn't give companies a lot of time to understand the implications." there is some anecdotal evidence that some companies have found the process difficult, and in order to continue trading, they're taking the option of paying the tariffs for ease of trading, he added. The rules of origin do not apply only to raw materials, but also to products that are modified in a European Union country and contain ingredients or components from outside of the European Union. If it is not deemed to be sufficiently processed in that country, then they may not comply with the rules of origin, said Fergus McReynolds. Manufacturing Northern Ireland has also identified difficulties for local traders importing from the United Kingdom. Earlier this year, Stephen Kelly, the chief executive of the trade body, told a select committee of an automotive company that was buying axles from a German supplier. Under the special arrangements for Northern Ireland, which is observing European Union rules, tariffs should not have applied to that trade. However, because the axle was first sent to Britain for modification, the rules of origin exemptions did not apply.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
Axel Jawadi talks about the various keys of life and has brought about this book to be a companion for the very famous Mafatil Jiran, where one is a tool or the keys for paradise, and this book, of course, are the keys of life.
The Keys of Life, a program designed to tell you that what Islam gives you will help get you home with joy and faithfulness. So, well, listen to
The Keys of Life.
The world is a very, very big house, many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up, we must unlock them all today. So all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. When we're talking about interaction with other people and socializing, it's always important for us to remember that we have a duty, we have a responsibility, and that is to represent who we are, ourselves, our family, our religion, in a positive way. And that's why, you know, when you do have colleagues, when you do have associates, when you do have classmates, that you are someone who is delightful to be with. And that's why when we're talking about, you know, this socializing and things like that, there are certain huquq that one needs to observe. And this is all under the category of al-khaliq, which means someone who you are socializing with. And there are so many ahadith that speak about how Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi was prior to the advent of Islam, during the era of al-jahiliyyah, where he was, as even the people of al-jahiliyyah used to say, where he was ni'm al-khaliq, he was a very honorable kind of person to socialize with and to mingle with. And that's how we need to be, you know, when we're at work, when we're at school, wherever we may be, we're someone who is enjoyable, we're someone who is not rigid or intimidating or negative or isolated or antisocial or any of these other bad or negative things that brush off a bad vibe for other people. I think that's an important point that Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli makes very, very quickly here. But I'd like to continue on and speak about another very interesting thing that we practice in general as Eastern, Middle Eastern people, as Muslims, we are very, very strict when it comes to this. And that is, when we hear that someone is sick, the first thing that is triggered in our mind is go and visit them. One of the things that a sick person, one of the things that they are fortunate to have while they are sick is the presence of angels, of malaika around them. And that's why it's very mustahab when you're visiting a sick person for you to visit them in the state of wudu, for you to visit them and be very calm. Yes, you show your affection. It's mustahab to even wipe over their head. But at the same time, you need to observe, you know, the delicacy of the situation, which is why one of the recommended things, one of the sunnahs to do, to observe, when it does come to you visiting a sick person, is don't prolong your stay in the presence of the sick person. Go there, let it be for a few minutes, nothing longer than that, and then leave. And this is among the many, many rewards.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
A lot of these rewards, from what we can understand from the ahadith from Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, a lot of these rewards is something that we will see in our qabr, which is exactly why it's a sunnah mu'akkada, because of the many benefits that it has, the many spiritual benefits that it has. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi, he says, "Man sa'a li mariidin fi hajatin." If you were to fulfill one of the needs of an ill person, the ill person, he can't do anything, she's not able to do her normal chores, or they need some kind of paperwork done, or whatever it may be, and you fulfill those needs of this ill person. And sa'a li mariidin fi hajatin. This is exactly what we're talking about when we discuss the topic of khidmatun nas, of serving people, and how honorable it is for you to be fortunate enough to serve others. And this is why, you know, there's a hadith Qudsi that says that if Allah loves you, He will appoint you to be someone who serves other people. That's the best thing. And if Allah dislikes you, He will never appoint you to someone to serve anyone, because you will even be too lazy to serve yourself, let alone serve anyone else. And if you do serve anyone else, you'll give them that much of a headache, and you'll remind them of this favor of yours. They wish you hadn't done it in the first place. مَنْ سَعَى لِمَرِيضٍ فِي حَاجَةٍ قَضَاهَا وَلَمْ يَقْضِهَا خَرَجَ مِنْ ذُنُوبِهِ كَيَوْمٍ وَلَدَتْهُ أُمِّهِ. Whoever goes out to fulfill the needs of a sick person, and then their sins will be forgiven in such a way where it is like as if they have not, it's like as if they were just born. في حاجة قضاها أو لم يقضها. Even here it says, you know, that you went out, you tried to go and you pursued to fulfill their needs. Either you were able to fulfill it successfully, or you weren't able, but you pursued it. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will forgive your sins, and it will be as clean a slate. It was like, it will be like as if you are a born again person. كَيَوْمٍ وَلَدَتْهُ أُمُّهُ. Visiting the sick people, remembering that we need to, as this hadith says, خَفِّفْ الْجُلُوسِ. And also, this hadith is from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. As I said, that the dua of a sick person, of an ill person, is answered. Imam Sadiq says, إِذَا دَخَلَ أَحَدُكُمْ عَلَى أَخِيهِ عَائِدًا. If you are visiting your fellow brother who is sick, and you're visiting them, فَلْيَسْأَلْهُ يَدْعُ لَهُ. So you should ask them to do dua for you. فَإِنَّ دُعَاءَهُ مِثْلُ دُعَاءِ الْمَلَائِكَةِ. Because the dua of an ill person is like the dua of angels. والحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams, hear the children's cries.
That was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane, and you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.